Welcome to Beyond Ghosts, Interactive Paranormal. It is John Crescito, the host of the program. It is what date, Mr. Martin Shevchik?
The 15th of June.
That is right, June 15, 2010. And this is the all-new, brand-fantastic episode of Beyond Ghosts. And tonight is a great night for Beyond Ghosts because you know what? I said it last week, I'll say it again this week. We are absolutely putting our money where our mouth is. Tonight is the other side of the coin, folks. And it's going to be Skeptics Night tonight on Beyond Ghosts. And we have the second side of the story. We're talking to our good friend, the managing editor for the magazine Skeptical Inquirer. We're talking Mr. Benjamin Radford is in the house. And he is going to tell a lot of the folks out there listening and some of us on this side of the mic some of the deficiencies and some of the things that he thinks are going wrong with people looking to hunt the shadows. We talk about it all the time on the show. We're liking the fun. We're liking the games. We like to be interesting and light. But tonight, no foot in the mouth. We're going to be learning something on this program. We're having a good time doing it, but we're going to learn something from a guy that might have something to teach you. Everybody listen up. We're not selling out. It's a great guy, great topic. Tonight on the program, the skeptical side of the house as far as ghost hunting and the paranormal is concerned. Ben Radford is here, babies. Beyond Ghost Interactive Paranormal. We'll be back in a minute. Get the party started. Shevchik, Crescito, and Willard. Boom.
Come up to the lab and see what's on the slab.
Well, good evening and welcome to Beyond Ghosts, Interactive Paranormal. Yes, it is your host, John Crescito. And before I take the opportunity to introduce our exclusive guest joining us this evening, per the usual, we got to go there, folks at home. Let me allow the world's greatest co-hosting tandem tell you beautiful folks at home, their fans, what the heck they've been doing, why they've been doing that, and what they're getting out of it. We're going to start with the guy I like to call Ace Number One. We're talking the man, the myth, the legend. We're going to go with Ryan, the Professor Willard. Ryan, what's going on, brother man? How you been, and what is going down home, Slice?
Well, we had that Eagle House event Saturday.
Right.
And it's a good time.
Fantastic time.
Lots of things happening. Good crowd.
Place is haunted.
It is.
Great food.
Lots of spirits at the bar.
Yum, yum.
And hopefully we'll maybe go back there in a few months.
If they'll have us.
If they'll have us.
I think Marty stole some silverware.
Well, then we're screwed. I heard he had dined and dashed, too. Oh, no.
I would say
it. Let's keep it clean,
they
gentlemen.
Still owe me one, so.
Uh-oh. That's right.
But on to the next, right? On to the next.
On
so,
to the next, so.
That's all I have, really.
Really? Everything else is good with you?
Yeah, everything's good. Good
How's
summer.
Family?
Family's good.
Okay, so thank you very much, Ryan, the Willardian, the professor, the man, the myth, the legend. That's Willard. Now we're moving right over here to my left, and we're talking to, we're talking to Marty Shevchik. Marty, how you doing, pal? What's been going on since last we met on the radio there, feller?
Good, good. I mean, it has been full swing for us here. You know, we just roll with the TAFS event Memorial Day weekend.
Are you French? Who's we?
We.
Oui, oui. Mon chéri.
That's
Mexican, dude.
Rolled right into the Eagle House event, and, you know, then we got our Shays event, and then...
We're doing it to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just busy, busy, busy.
And then on to Philly.
Yes.
For cheesesteaks.
If I can go.
Parole.
Yeah. If the PO lets me go, so.
All right, so listen. So for those of you that don't know, yes, Beyond Ghosts is really Beyond Ghosts Interactive Paranormal. In the Interactive Paranormal side of the house, we do a lot of events in a lot of situations where you people out there listening, you wonderful, beautiful people, can actually meet us out on the road and come ghost hunting with us to see what really goes on when people actually conduct paranormal investigations. Too cool. What do you guys say? Is that good stuff or what?
Yes.
That's great.
That was kind of a segue. I've been doing this for a minute. So you guys ready to rock and roll? Get our guest on?
Yeah.
Okay, tonight's a very special night, and it's a bit of a milestone as far as I'm concerned. We, of course, run the full gamut. We have people that come out here and talk about cryptozoology. Those will be your monster hunters. We talk to people like, you know, 8 times out of 10 about ghost hunting and haunted locations. Those are your paranormalists. We even had the occasion a few times to talk to people about ufology. That would be those grays and those little men from outer space talking Martians. Tonight, we're talking to somebody that a lot of people might not be familiar with, but he actually has a different perspective on some of the stuff that we normally talk about on this program. And we're talking to a guy that's authored over 300 articles on topics ranging from mysterious monsters and urban legends to even stuff about extraterrestrial life. He is the managing editor of the Skeptical Inquirer magazine. We're talking to Mr. Benjamin Radford. Mr. Radford, are you there with us, and how are you doing, sir?
I am indeed. Good to hear from you.
Thank you very much. Now, you actually wrote a book that Mr. Martin Shefchik is actually going to tell us what it's entitled. Go ahead, Marty. What's the book?
Scientific Paranormal Investigations, How to Solve Unexplained Mysteries.
True story, right?
Sounds like an awesome title, man.
Sounds like a great book, Ben.
Yeah.
Where can we get it?
I think it is. It's you can get it at, it's not yet on Amazon.com. It'll probably be there within the next few weeks or month, but otherwise you can get it at my website, radfordbooks.com, RADFORDbooks.com, or scientificparanormalinvestigation.net. It'll bounce you back there.
And I'll ask the question that Marty's been dying to ask.
Yeah.
Is there any pictures in the book?
There are 85 illustrations.
You like that.
Yeah, there's a the demon. There's no porn in there, if that's what you're getting at.
No scratches,
man. I'm just saying. No, we got Chupacabra. We got photos from some of my lake monster investigations, a couple of my ghost investigations, remote viewer psychic. There's quite a bit of stuff there.
Okay, sounds like a great book. Now we'll have to wait for it to come out, unless you're going to forward us a review copy.
You know, I think I could arrange that.
Then I love you.
There you go.
Marty, go ahead. What are you going to say?
I just got the question. How did you get into this whole aspect of, you know, writing books on paranormal investigations, you know, all the myths, the legends?
The phenomena.
From a skeptical point of view?
From a skeptical point of view. How
the phenomena. Well, in a nutshell, basically, I had, when I was a kid growing up, you know, out here in New Mexico, where I currently live,
yeah.
I would... you know, as many people, I had a voracious appetite for books, and so when I was a teenager, I would go and there's a used bookstore, independent bookstore. Unfortunately, they're getting harder and harder to come by.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a really nice one not too far away, and so during the summer, I would take my allowance money, usually $5 or $6, and I'd go buy a whole bunch of used books. And the ones that I really liked were the spooky ones, the ones that were books about mysterious monsters and aliens and, you know, psychic powers and ghosts and this and that. And a lot of more books from the 50s, like, for example, by Frank Edwards, there was a book that he had called Stranger Than Science and various other ones like that. And I was fascinated by these books, and I would read all about, you know, a lot of the typical sort of, you know, paranormal unexplained stories.
Right.
And I was fascinated by them, and I read a whole bunch of them, but I noticed a pattern in that I would read these books, but there didn't seem to be any real investigation.
Mm-hmm.
The authors would sort of tell ghost stories, or they would tell monster stories, and these were presented as true stories. I mean, these weren't, you know, ooh, fictional fun stories to tell around the campfire. These were like real facts, you know, real stuff.
Yeah.
But then when I started sort of looking into it and sort of developing a more critical mind, I was saying, well, hold on here. There's, you know, where's the references? Who, you know, how does this person know there's an actual quote there? You know, where did these things come up with? And so I sort of got disillusioned with many of the sort of woo-woo, mystery-mongering paranormal books, because I noticed that there was little or no actual investigation. And so I grew up, another 10 years later, and I ended up writing for Skeptical Inquirer Science Magazine, which I'm now the editor of and have been for 10 years. And I came across that magazine, and I noticed that there actually was articles about, for example, one of the first ones I came across was a piece by James Randi, the amazing Randi, on Nostradamus.
Yeah.
And I had never before seen anybody criticizing or sort of giving a more skeptical view on Nostradamus. I had read lots and lots and lots of books and magazine articles talking about how amazing and mysterious Nostradamus was,
mm-hmm.
but before I had come across Randi's article, I had never seen anybody saying, well, hold on here, you know, there's another way to look at it. So that sort of brought me into it.
Okay. And before we go any further, I mean, obviously a lot of people, so they can kind of wrap their head around the kind of guest that you are, Mr. Radford, you have made a number of appearances in the media known as television, and you've been on CNN, Discovery Channel, The Learning Channel. We're talking about National Geographic. I mean, it's pretty much an endless list. So if there's anybody that's going to come out and talk about the skeptical perspective as it pertains to the paranormal, you'd be one of the it guys, fair?
Yeah, it's that's certainly fair. It is kind of a shallow pool. I mean, it's it's the same thing. I mean, it's kind of funny. I get calls a couple times a year from like a TV show producer or whatever else. And for example, if someone wants to know about, you know, Mr. Radford, have you investigated lake monsters? Well, in fact, I have, and I wrote a book about it called Lake Monster Mysteries. Yep. But what you find, of course, is that there's a shallow pool of people who are interested and not knowledgeable about lake monsters to begin with, and then an even smaller pool of those people are from the skeptical point of view. And so once you start getting to like, for example, Bigfoot skeptics, there's me, there's the late Mike Dennett, there's Dave Daigling, Blake Smith, and a couple others. Mm-hmm. But you know, whereas if you want to talk on the believer side, you've got everybody from Rick Knoll to Jeff Meldrum to Moneymaker, etc. So I'm sort of, you know, in a sort of niche right market, but it works out.
Okay, so really fast, now hold on, now Ben, so why do you think there is such a rush to judgment on the part of these people? There are so many more believers than skeptics. Why do you think there is? What's the attraction?
Well, I think there's a couple answers to that. One of them is that a lot of times people aren't really exposed to the skeptical point of view in the first place. I come across this over and over and over again. I've got a shelf full of books on ghosts and monsters and psychics and this and crop circles and take your pick. And I would say without exaggerating, probably 90% of them have no reference to any skeptical or scientific research at all. Either the authors aren't doing good research and they just have never read the research and haven't read up on it, yeah, or they are intentionally leaving out the skeptical point of view. Mm. I think is intellectually dishonest. And I mean, I understand the idea behind, you know, creating a mystery and trying to sell a mystery and ooh, spooky book and whatever else. But the way I see it is that these things are fascinating. You know, ghosts are cool. Monsters are awesome. I mean, these things are fascinating in and of themselves, and you don't need to help. You don't need to, you know, hype and exaggerate the mystery to turn into a fascinating subject. So, to my mind, the skeptical, more scientific point of view is just as interesting, if not more so, than the sort of more mystery mongering side of it.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that because, you know, if someone has a piece of evidence, you know, to say that this is definitely what I'm saying it is, rather than bringing it to light as like a, well, this is what I think it might be, but it could be this, you know, maybe you want to research this or try this. I think it, you know, being part of a skeptic is also inviting other people to help out and to assist. And it's kind of, I don't know, making it fun for everybody, because I think it's fun to take a piece of evidence, review it and dissect it and kind of come up with different theories on what it may be.
Absolutely. I mean, and to my mind, that's basically the scientific process. I mean, there's not. I often get asked, well, what's the difference between skepticism and science and the scientific methods? And in a way, there isn't any. I mean, the same principles and methods that you use to find out about the world, yeah, are the same ones you use to find out about ghosts or anything else. And so you're still using critical thinking. You're using logic. You're using, scientific methodologies, control groups, trying to understand the phenomena. So it's not as if this whole skepticism thing is some weird, bizarre thing that, you know, you only dust off the shelf now and then. I mean, this is a viable, you know, point of view for investigating anything, whether it's paranormal or not.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people, they take things personally. A lot of people are even afraid to release evidence because they're afraid it's going to get shot down. But, you know, if I have something and I put it out there and I'm like, okay, this is what we captured on our audio recorders, this is what we think it is. If someone else knows better or someone else came across something, oh yeah, you know what, we got the same thing and it turned out to be this, or same thing with like a video piece, you know, we catch some kind of light or something flying across and we think it's something and we put it out there as possibly being a spirit. But if someone comes back and says, "Oh no, with that camera, with this light, I know it's something has to do with the camera, the way the light shined in on it from the other part of the room." Right. That's what I want to know. My feelings aren't going to be hurt, and I think that's the problem a lot of people have is they don't like to be told it's not what they think it is, and they get their feelings hurt. They take it real personally.
I think you're absolutely right, and I totally respect your point of view on that. It's I think that's a really that's an angle to this whole phenomenon that I think a lot of people overlook. You know, whether the subject is ghosts or psychics, whatever else, or monsters, Bigfoot, people have a vested interest in this, and so you know they have their own pet theories about you know that you know for example every, you know. Orbs are ghosts. Well, people, some people will live and die on that, or you know, the 67 Patterson Gimlin film, or whatever else. Yeah. And or to use a different example, psychics. You know, for many psychics, if you challenge their claims, that to them is a personal attack on them.
Right.
And I try to say, look, I'm not, you know, and I've dealt with many, many psychics and people who claim to be psychic and talk to dead people. And I say, look, you know, I'm challenging your interpretation. I'm challenging your evidence. I'm not challenging you. I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm not saying you're crazy. This is not a personal attack. This is not a personal issue. You know, either ghosts exist or they don't. Uh-huh. Either you can talk to dead people or you can't. Either you can predict the future with psychic powers or you can't. This is a scientific, falsifiable, testable issue. This isn't a matter of opinion. This isn't a matter of hurting people's feelings. And so, you know, when I publish my articles and research investigations, I'm perfectly happy to have people poke holes in it and you know, and give me their best threat. And if I'm wrong about something, I'm happy to say that I'm wrong. I mean, if it's informed, constructive criticism, I'm open to that. If it's just sort of pot shots, well, you know, I don't think that's right. Well, why don't you think it's right? Well, I just don't. Well, okay, thanks.
All right, so hang on a minute. Benjamin, you've been around the paranormal for a little bit of a while now, so this is going to come as no shock to you, my friend. But All the ego and all the viciousness by which people criticize in the field each other's evidence is a really big reason why a lot of people, like Ryan said, don't want to be so forthcoming with quote-unquote evidence. That's the big kick here.
Oh, I think you're right, and that's a shame. Absolutely. You know, it baffles me. I mean, you know, in the field of, I know we're focusing on ghosts, but for example, in the field of Bigfoot, you know, when the Skookum cast, the sort of Bigfoot butt print came up, yeah. I asked the guy that owned it, Matt Moneymaker, permission to see the cast, to see what was considered to be the best evidence for Bigfoot since the 67 Patterson Gimlin film,
right.
And he refused. He said, no, you can't see it. And I said, look, you know, I'm not going to break the cast. I'm not going to do anything to it. I just want to, you know, you say you have good evidence for Bigfoot. I'd like to see it. And he eventually I did see it through Rick Knoll. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to me that he was so defensive about it. He only wanted only his experts. He wanted only his only handpicked certain people to look at it. And that's not science. That's not how science works.
What do you say, Marty?
I just got a question for you. In all your research with the, you know, paranormal and monsters and everything, is there anything that you come across that, I mean, that you could say is plausible? Or is everything just, nah, it doesn't exist, there's no such thing? I mean, is there anything you come across in your experience that, you know, it leads you to believe that maybe there is some kind of phenomenon out there?
Personally?
In what field? In any field?
We're going to break monsters? Down soon.
Monsters?
Yeah, cryptozoology. Let's stick there.
Cryptids. Sure, sure. Oh, sure, absolutely. I would say probably the closest I would say in terms of cryptozoology would be when I was doing research for my book, Lake Monster Mysteries, got published a couple years back, and I researched Canadian lake monsters, including one in Newfoundland, and there's a place called Crescent Lake, and there's supposed to be a Cressy, the monster of Crescent Lake, and I went up to Newfoundland, and I investigated it, and interviewed eyewitnesses, and this and that. And I believe that there is probably something large in the lake. Really? Do I think? Yeah. What happens as you sort of, you know, as you research more and more of the eyewitness sightings and descriptions of this particular lake monster, you find that they are virtually identical to large eel, and you know, it's sort of long and flat and dark and. And at one point, I finally just asked the guy I was interviewing, I said, are there large eel in the lake? And he said, oh, absolutely, well, there's lots of them. I'm like, okay, well, you know, does that prove that there's no lake monster in the lake? No. But it suggests that it's certainly plausible that, you know, it's not that people are making it up. It's not that people are crazy. It's that people are most likely seeing large eel and interpreting that as a lake monster. In a different field, for example, if you're talking about like psychic powers. I have a background in psychology. I have a degree in psychology, and I think that to my mind, the most plausible sort of quasi psychic power that might be real is intuition. I think that there may be something intuition. Now, I'm not suggesting that intuition is necessarily anything supernatural or paranormal, but right. I think that you know there is a way in which the human mind can sort of know information without knowing how we know it. And if you're interested, I can give you a much more detailed psychological analysis of that. But basically, I think that there is something to intuition. I'm not saying it's paranormal, but I think that there's something to it.
What about ghosts?
Hold on one second, guys.
We're going to take a break, probably.
We're going to take a fast break, but I have a whole elementary list there, Mr. Radford, that we're actually going to go through A to Z when I come back from the break, and we're going to hit up ghosts, we're going to hit up haunting. So hold that thought, okay, my friend?
Bring it on.
All right, Ben, hang on one second. Guys, I'm talking, of course, Marty and Ryan. We're taking a break, or this is Beyond Ghosts, Interactive Paranormal. Be back in a momento, babies, and welcome to Skeptics Night.
I love the Chupacabra.
Booyah. Folks, you got to check it out. We're talking about go to PhantomLight.com. That's PhantomLite.com. And check out the Phantom Light Illuminators. You're not hearing a ghost. It's John Crescito. Welcome back to Beyond Ghosts Interactive Paranormal Babies. I'm here with Marty Shevchik, and I'm here with Ryan the Professor Willard. And our guest this evening is the managing editor of the Skeptical Inquirer magazine, Mr. Benjamin Radford. And we're talking about all things paranormal. And, of course, we're kind of going there with a skeptic's flavor, which I think is definitely needed, especially at this particular juncture in time. And where we left off, I think you were segueing somewhere there, Shevchik. You were kind of going toward the ghosts and the hauntings.
Well, yeah, I had originally asked him prior to the break.
Right.
You know, if there was something he came across in his research, if there was anything he could actually believe in, so to speak.
Well, before we actually do that, the way I want to take this particular segment, Ben, is I want to kind of break down. I want to do this, you know, in a categorized fashion. I'm going to just throw a couple things out there, and you tell me what you think as far as the cons and the pros of the possibility of this stuff even existing, okay?
All right. Well, I mean, let me just start out by saying anything that you throw at me, my answer is going to be, is it possible that it exists? Absolutely. It is not. I have never ever said that ghosts don't exist or Bigfoot doesn't exist or anything else, because that's not scientific. Science is always amenable to further evidence and further changes. And so, you know, just because, I mean, if you ask me, you know, is there good evidence so far, you're going to get a very different answer. But, you know, I'm just saying that's important to understand, is that, you know, when people hear that I'm skeptical, it's like, oh, you're saying that these things don't exist. No, I've never said that. Okay. All I've said is that the evidence so far isn't good enough. So you know, and we can get it in my book. I talk, you know, I have a whole section on the difference between things. You know, is it possible? Well, anything is possible. The question isn't what's possible. The question is what's the evidence for. So shoot away.
Okay, but you are a skeptic.
Oh, absolutely.
That's not a bad word.
But let me just add that Jason and Grant call themselves skeptics too. So make of that what you will.
Now, hold on. Is there a difference between a debunker and a skeptic?
I'm not a debunker. I'm a skeptic. I think you know, if you. My position is that people on either end are not healthy, either mentally or for the field. I mean, if you are a debunker and if your point of view is that everything here is BS, and you know, well, this is ridiculous. You know, ghosts can't exist. If that's the way you're approaching it, then you're closed minded. Then you're wasting your time. And the same thing on the other end. If you believe that any orb is a ghost, and you believe that any blob, you know, in a photo or a video is a Bigfoot or a monster or a UFO, then you're not thinking critically either. And so I think that it's important to have, you know, as they say, it's important to have an open mind, but not so open that your brains fall out.
Right. So there has to be a happy balance somewhere.
Absolutely. And so, which is why, you know, I actually kind of bristle when people use the word debunker, because I'm not a debunker and I don't deal with the debunkers.
Okay.
So you could say you're like somewhat of a skeptical believer.
Yeah. I call myself a scientific paranormal investigator because I believe that I really am bringing a scientific point of view to it, and I wish more people would do the same.
Okay. All right, so let's go with that. Okay, everything you said sounds wonderful. So let me just throw these out there, and I'm going to get your take on this, okay?
Yep.
Demons, exorcisms, and possession. Welcome to the show, pal.
Well, I mean, I can give you 20 minutes on any of those topics. I actually wrote a chapter on possession exorcism for a book. I think it's called Everything You Know About God Is Wrong. It was by the Disinformation Company. But so I've, you know, in terms of exorcisms and possession, I haven't seen any good evidence that demons exist in the real world and actually can possess people.
Right.
What you find in psychology is that there are many people who believe that they're possessed. And so that shouldn't surprise any, but of course, just believing you're possessed or believing you're in the presence of some supernatural power doesn't mean that you are. And so in the cases that I've looked into in terms of, you know, supposed, you know, hard best cases for demonic possession, you know, were they freaking out? Were they, you know, were they doing crazy stuff? Yeah. Were they, you know, puking and flying, you know, puking green slime and flying in the air and you know, possessing supreme strength? No. So, you know, in terms of demons, I think that if you believe in demons, then you may see them. But in the same way that if you believe in witchcraft and voodoo spells, then they can have effect on you. But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily out there in the real world.
That's a little disheartening and saddening for me.
Why
is that?
I watch Ghost Adventures. The guy was possessed like three times out of the first couple of seasons, pal. Did you watch it? It's on Travel Channel.
Yeah, I've seen some of those shows. Honestly, I tend to yell and throw things at the TV, and I had to buy a new TV, so I what I do is I get them on Netflix, and I sort of fast forward through the really stupid parts.
Okay, it must have been a ratings blitz.
I guess you got to just change your tune when you're watching this. Look at it more as a comedy. Than a drama.
Yeah, sort of like
I do find it funny. Similar.
It's entertaining.
Well, I mean, like I always refer to Coast to Coast as the Art Bell Comedy Hour, even though it's not by Art Bell anymore. It's longer than an hour, but it was always just hilarious. Sure. So I, you know, if you go into it knowing that's what it is, then you know that's cool.
I love George Norrie. Hello.
Click.
That's a true story. No, there's nothing wrong with the guy. I think what he does, he's offering his opinion. I say, you know. God bless him.
Whatever. I mean, if you want to give a voice to these people, I mean, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I do have a problem with what Art Bell did with the whole the suicides and the Heaven's Gate case because Art Bell really whipped up the whole story behind that, and you know, he gave information about, oh, there's a UFO following Comet Hale-Bopp and this and that, and people, I mean, granted, the Heaven's Gate cult were already crazy and whatever else, but I mean, it's indisputable that Art Bell helped promote that whole thing. So I think he's got a little bit of blood on his hands, whether he accepts that or not.
Karma, huh? Be careful. So, all right. So you were saying, so demons, exorcisms, and possessions. In your opinion, there's really no credibility or any credence to that.
Not really. I mean, again, you know, sure. I mean, it's. I'd like to see it. I mean, it's not so much that people have presented me with good evidence for these and I've poo-pooed it. I've looked at the stuff and I don't find anything compelling. If someone wants to present something to me, I'm happy to look at it. But from my research, you know, there are plenty of people who believe they're possessed, but just believing you're possessed or just believing that a ghost tapped you on the shoulder doesn't mean that it did.
Right. And like you said, a lot of these folks might have like emotional or mental problems, so, or even physical ailments that are natural. They just don't know it.
Absolutely, sure.
Okay, moving right along, we're going to hit up Marty's favorite and the one that he kind of started in on before the first break, ghosts and hauntings. Let's first focus on the ghosts, they themselves, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that?
What's up with that? What you talking about, Willis?
Channel him, pal. Whoa. He's a ghost, huh? Sheesh.
Well, it depends. I mean, with ghosts, you know, I mean, we could talk about this for 3 hours, but I mean, part of the, you know, part of the problem is that, and this is no news to you guys, but part of the problem is that there isn't any good working definition of ghost. I mean, I can give you a half dozen definitions of ghost that, that people completely believe in. And some people believe that they're spirits of the departed. Other people believe that they're some sort of telepathic projection that's put out there into the world.
Right.
Some people believe, I mean, take your pick. And so, you know, because there isn't even an agreed upon definition of ghost, I mean, there's sort of a general public definition that some people sort of have in their minds from watching TV and reading books. Mm-hmm. But when you talk to supposed experts, investigators, you get, as you know, you get a wide variety of you know, definitions and characteristics. And Absolutely. So it's sort of like nailing Jell-O to the wall, where, you know, I mean, a ghost can be anything. I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing to me over the last, you know, decade that I've been doing these research investigations. I mean, I've said, well, what evidence are you coming to me with ghosts? And so, for some people, it's orbs. They're convinced the orbs are ghosts. Oh. For some people, I've had a headache. Someone said, you know, I was walking by this old house, and I suddenly got a headache, and I think it was a ghost warning me. Well, okay, I mean, I mean, no, seriously. Okay, what do I do with that? I mean, the guy is being sincere. I don't think he's lying. I don't think he's crazy. Mm-hmm. He could have gotten a headache for. I mean, I get headaches every now and then. I mean, it's, you know, but just weather. Because in his mind there's some connection there doesn't mean there necessarily is. And so the number of things that are considered to be evidence for ghosts is just limitless. And so, you know, it's just such a wide open inchoate field. It's hard to really know where to go with it.
As far as, like, what we do scientifically, though, for that, I mean, granted, you know, I mean, let's say in all retrospect there is such thing as ghosts, right, and everything like that. What makes it, how will we even know that our science here in the real world is even relative to that over there? I mean, you know what I'm trying to get at? I mean,
scientifically,
what science do we apply to it?
Yeah.
Well, sure. And I mean, that's an excellent question. It's a fair question. And, you know, that's what a good chunk of chapter 4 in my book is about. Is sort of,
yeah.
Well, it just happens to
waiting
me.
For that book that Radford. You better get
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the middle of an interview. I'll send you a review copy since I'm done, man.
Awesome.
But no, I mean, it's, you know, it's a fair question. And, you know, the problem is that again, when you're dealing with the ghosts, yeah, on one, you have this sort of split personality on this. I remember I was doing a investigation for the TV show Mystery Quest about 6 months ago, and I was paired up with a demonologist and his crew. I'm not sure why the producers figured that I was going to work well with the demonologist, but whatever. And I'm talking to the guy, and he's a fairly well-known guy, and they brought in tens of thousands of dollars of ghost hunting equipment. They brought in, you know, FLIR, and they brought in, you know, EMF detectors, and just you know, a whole Radio Shack's worth of stuff.
Right.
And they're setting all this stuff, and you know, you know the type, you've seen this. Right. And I'm talking to the guy, and this was sort of like during the break, you know, in between tapings, and I said, you know, we're just talking. He's obviously the, you know, more of the believer and more of the skeptic. I said, look, yeah, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, you brought all this stuff with you. Why do you think it is that the evidence for ghosts hasn't gotten any better? Why is it that, you know, the evidence for ghosts is no better today than it was a week ago, a month ago, a year ago, a decade ago, etc.? I mean, it's just the evidence is not getting any better. And he said something very interesting to me. He said, well, I mean, he admitted it. I mean, he wasn't trying to deny it, but he basically said, well, I don't think that we can detect ghosts with our current technology. And I said, what's with the van with $35,000 worth of stuff here? I mean, hold on here. You know, you're bringing, you know, again, just massive amounts of all this high-tech equipment that you see on Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventure routes. And he's bringing this stuff in here. I'm thinking, well, hold on here. On one hand, you're presenting this to the public and to me and to TV producers or everybody else as, you know, scientific, you know, gear that will detect ghosts, but on the other hand, you're telling me that you don't think that ghosts are detectable with scientific gear. It's like there's a very big contradiction there, and it was interesting because he it was clear to that nobody had ever really put it to him that way. He's like, oh, well, I mean, he's like, and I wasn't trying to trap him. I wasn't trying to, like, attack him. I'm just like, hold on here. Which is it? And so my point here is that, is that, you know, people need to recognize that the most of the ways that they're seeing on TV and in magazines as being, you know, this is how we investigate ghosts, mm-hmm. is complete bullshit. It's just, it's not, it's not. And you know, whether you're talking about, you know, the dowsers, or you're talking about, you know, EMF detectors, you're talking about, I mean, I can go into these in depth, but whatever equipment that people are bringing to it, when you ask them, when you try to pin them down and say, what is it that you think this is detecting? Well, you know, some theories say, well, no. What exactly are you detecting? And they don't really have an answer. And that's, I think that's very revealing.
So where would you think, Radford, would be the starting point? Say for yourself, if we brought you into a location, and just for the sake of argument, we were there together trying to investigate the paranormal. Where is the scientific starting point to actually try to figure out how do you ghost hunt?
Excellent question. And the answer is you work from the claims. And that's how I do it. I mean, again, I've investigated dozens of ghosts. I'm probably best known for the Chemo ghost haunting in the Southwest, the Santa Fe Courthouse ghost,
right.
Of the haunted Rose Hall in Jamaica, and other ones as well. So, I mean, I've done lots of these investigations, and I do them without most of the gear that you see on TV. And the answer is that it stems from the claims. So if for example, let's take a common example that a battery drain. You know, as you know, many ghost investigators believe that C and D and other batteries,
yep.
in a ghostly location are drained, and some of them believe that you know, that, oh my God, you know, it was the weirdest thing. You know, I put fresh batteries in my camera and my EMF detector. I walked around for 10 minutes and they were suddenly dead. And some people believe, again, there's lots of some people believes in this,
oh, yeah.
but some people believe that that the reason is because ghosts need energy to manifest themselves, and so they're sort of sucking energy out of the batteries in order to make themselves appear. Well, that's great. You know, it's an interesting theory. Let's test it. And so again, if that's the claim, you have to work from the specific claim. So if that's the claim,
right.
there are ways of testing that. In fact, I did that at Wolf Manor, Andelberry Estates in Clovis, California. I did exactly that for a TV show, and I took C&D batteries and I put them at the location, one of the supposedly most haunted locations in California.
Yep.
And I also put a group of control group batteries at another location, and I tested both a day later, and there was no difference at all. So that wasn't the best scientific experiment in the world, but it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, these are testable claims. Either a battery, whether it's a car battery or a D cell battery, whatever else, either a battery drains more quickly in a supposedly haunted location, or it does not. That is a measurable, that is a measurable, quantifiable thing. And so, if that's the claim, mm-hmm. there are ways to test that. And so, that would be one starting point: is to have people zero in on the specific testable claims that they're making about it. For example, if you believe that electromagnetic fields have some correlation with ghosts,
uh-huh.
then do the research. Then you know, find areas that are known to have high EMFs and see if there's a correlation there. And you know, induce, you know, there's, you can get into the stuff about Persinger, and I can talk about that too.
Sure.
But I guess the short answer to your question is,
yeah.
the way you test this is you come up with a set of very specific testable falsifiable claims about ghosts, and you figure out how can we find out whether this is true or not, and you conduct those experiments in a scientific manner.
That's a good answer.
Thank you.
So the long and short of it, would you have had more respect for that demonologist whoever you were posing the question about all this gear that they brought? Would you have more respect for them if they said, you know what, they're really cool and I have fun playing with them?
Yes. No, seriously. I mean, that's, you know, look, if people want to believe in ghosts, I don't care.
Right.
I really don't. I you know, people want to believe, you know, that angels are flying over their heads, or if they want to believe there's a chupacabra in the backyard, I don't care. Where I come into it is where if someone says there's evidence for this, or I believe this, and this is why I believe it because there's a claim. You know, you're talking about, you know, Frank's box, and you're thinking, you know, the broken radio to the dead, and he's saying he can you know, talk to dead people through it.
Right.
These are testable claims, and so at the point in which you're coming to me as a scientific paranormal investigator, and you're saying, you know, there's evidence for this, or I can prove this. At that's where I draw the line. That's where my antenna, you know, that's where my spidey sense picks up. And I'm like, hold on here.
Yeah.
I mean, if all you come to me is you say, I believe in ghosts, but I don't really have any good reason for it, and I admit that there isn't good evidence for it, that's cool. You know, whatever. But if you're going to assert that, you know, I know that there are ghosts, or if you're going to say, you know, I experienced something, it couldn't be anything but a ghost, no, I'm gonna call you on it.
All right, so let me just ask you, so in your opinion, when it comes to locations, do you believe that living things can leave behind an energy signature, like a residual mark of some kind?
I don't know of any good scientific evidence for that. I've heard that a lot. I mean, you know, right. you hear that in ghost investigations. You hear that, for example, in examinations of psychics. You know, psychics believe that, for example, objects by people who are missing or who are murdered, a set of keys or a clothing or a belt. You know, if the person was murdered in the same room, that it has some sort of special, you know, vibrations or fear or
impression of some kind.
Yeah, negative. Yeah, and that's all interesting, but there's no good evidence for it. I mean, they've done studies, for example, where people who claim to have psychic powers and who claim to be able to do this process called psychometry, mm-hmm. you can test this. Again, this is a testable claim. Yeah. You can bring in, you know, 10 control objects in front of a person who claims that they have psychic powers and say, okay, here's these 10 objects, you know, a set of keys, a shoe, you know, a calculator, whatever, take your pick. Which of these belonged to a person who was murdered? And when you do these tests, and there have been tests that have been done like that, they can't tell. They'll oh, well, you know, I'm sensing, you know, bad energy on the keys. Well, actually, those are my keys. They just came out of my pocket. There's no bad energy on them. And so, you know, the idea that you know, negative events or terrifying things or fear or whatever else can leave impressions, it's a common idea, and it's interesting, but nobody has yet put forth any good scientific evidence for that.
Not yet, huh?
Not yet, and I'd love to see it. And if, and again, I'm happy. I mean, I'm available to set up tests on these things. I mean, there are ways to test this. If someone really believes that they can sense these vibrations and sense these things, let's set up a test. I mean, the tests have already been done, and the answer has always been they can't do it.
Well, I think a big reason as far as scientific approach, real quick, before we cut the break, as far as, you know, you said you had to have a control. Mm-hmm. I don't have a control unless I have a house like I saw on the movie Poltergeist, where I could set a chair and a set of marks on the floor and get the same experience every time to scientifically, you know, try to study that phenomenon. It's almost next to impossible. I don't have a control. I can't say, hey, spirit, come here, move this object, or spirit, come closer. I can't do that every time I go out to investigate the paranormal. I mean, like you point the fact out with your batteries. You set the batteries out on location. I mean, how many times did you do that? You know, because you even confirmed that there was even a ghost. That ghost could have been at the both locations. You know what I'm saying? There's no.
No, you're exactly right, and we can talk more about that after the break.
Sure. Oh. Okay, so
nice segue.
Radford, you're hired. You're rounding up a team, pal. Welcome to Beyond Ghosts. All right, folks at home, we're taking a break. We're talking to the managing editor of the Skeptical Inquirer magazine, Mr. Benjamin Radford. It's Crescito. It's Chef Chick. It's Willard. Be back in a minute. This is Beyond Ghosts, babies. Go check out the site in the meantime, beyondghosts.com. Boom, shellac-lack, boom. Welcome back to Beyond Ghosts, Interactive Paranormal. Yes, you better believe your mama's right. This is John Crescito, host of the show. I'm here with Chef Chick. I'm here with Willard. And we're talking to Benjamin Radford. And before we went to the break, we were talking about a problem that Marty had as far as control groups when he's doing paranormal research. So, Ben, you were going to go ahead and answer that for us, please?
Yeah, he, you know, Marty hit it on a Willard, one of you, whoever it was.
Marty.
Marty, you know, he hit on exactly one of the problems, and that's why the lack of a control group. And that's why, for example, when you see on TV shows, especially Ghost Hunters Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters, almost always they feature what they call a stakeout or lockdown.
Lockdown.
You know, where they have, you know, overnight investigation. Right. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that it's basically a scientific experiment without the science. you know, scientific experiments are carefully controlled by investigators or experimenters. You can control some variables or conditions, and then you measure the variation. The problem with a stakeout or lockdown is that there's no control. It's you're sort of just walking around blind and assuming that whatever comes, you know, whatever you consider to be odd or unusual for whatever reason,
right,
might be evidence of ghosts. And that's exactly part of that's exactly the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, you know, if you look at the history and the success rate of the lockdowns, it's a 100% failure rate. I mean, of all of them that have all been done on TV and, you know, in local groups, not a single one of them has yielded good hard evidence of ghosts. It just hasn't. And so, you know, there's the old definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Same thing with turning off the lights. It just amazes me that people would look for ghosts with the lights off. You know, humans are visual creatures. We need our eyes to see. And the idea, I mean, if you turn off the lights, by definition, you are decreasing the amount of information available to understand the world around you.
Night shot.
Yeah, well, of course, it looks dramatic on TV. that's the distinction, is that, you know, when I do investigations, I'm not doing them to look dramatic on TV. I'm not doing them to look cool or like, oh my God, what's that? I'm doing them with the intent and the purpose to solve the mystery, to understand what's going on.
Right.
You know, what is that on the video? What are people reporting? You know, what's going on here? And so, you know, so I think that the sort of investigations that you see on TV are very, very different than the sort of investigations that I do. And one difference, and if I could just put it out there, is that,
sure,
is that for the most part, if you look at the investigations that I do, I actually solve the cases. The cases are solved. I can't say every single one of them, but
right,
virtually all the ones that I've investigated, I have found solutions. I have found the answer to the mystery. And if you look at most of the cases that, you know, Ghost Adventures, the Ghost Hunters, or take your pick, most Ghost Hunters in general, occasionally there are solved cases. I mean, I'll certainly grant that. But most of the time, the cases are not solved at the end. It's sort of like, well, you know, we think there's something mysterious here, and the investigation or the show ends with, well, you know, we got something weird here, and there's some sound here, and we
right.
got maybe there's an EVP saying Mary,
yeah,
and we don't know, and they move on. And there's no actual conclusion or definitive solution. It's just sort of, there's no better answer as to what happened after the investigation than before it, and that by definition is not a good investigation. But anyway, it's to sort of come back to the control groups. I mean, that's one of the main problems is exactly that. But I mean, there are ways to do a control group in a ghost investigation. For example, if you have some of the repeated sightings. You know, for example, you know, someone says that they see a woman in a long dress walking along a certain path or on, you know, in a second story window on every full moon, or you know on every April 13th when her husband, you know, was lost at sea or whatever else.
Right.
You can test this. I mean, you can be there when this happens, and either something unusual along the lines of what is reported occurs, or it doesn't. Or for example. It all depends on what the claim is, what the specific claim is. If somebody says, like, for example, there's actually one haunted house I investigated in Lackawanna, outside of Buffalo, where you guys are.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if have any of you guys read my investigation on that?
Perhaps.
Any chance?
No. You have to wait for my press release, pal. My book.
it's mentioned in as one of the chapters of my book, but
yes,
it's the demonic ghost house of Buffalo, and there was a case. Anyway, I investigated this case over the course of about 3 weeks, and it's a long, complicated case, and I can get into it later if you want. But basically, there were a whole bunch of claims. There was EVPs. There was a demonic face in the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
The guy said that a ghost was actually attacking him. And there was also supposedly ghostly footsteps on empty stairs and hallways. Now, again, there's ways to test this that you can in fact establish a control group and control conditions. And so you know you can get a comparable house and see you know one that was built you know maybe nearby or at the same time by the same builder, and you know are there. Is there some structural curiosity about you know the way it was built or whatever else that right. causes these sounds to do? And that's actually one of the biggest problems that I talk about in the book and also in the download about the problems with sampling is that most ghost hunters, you know, they'll walk around, you know, when they're beginning an investigation, they'll walk around with, you know, EMF detectors and you know, all sorts of temperatures, and yeah. they do all sorts of readings, you know, magnetic, blah, blah, this and that, whatever. And they do these readings, and then if the readings change over the course of the evening, then they consider that to be significant. Like, oh my God, you know, an hour ago, you know, there was nothing here, but now there's something here. Well, the problem is that there's only two readings there. That's not that's not nearly enough to establish a good baseline control group, and so you would need to have. What's happening is that they have an idea of what to do. I mean, they're correct in that in order to examine these things, you have to take samples, but. They're completely mistaken if they think that they can only take one or two sets of samples and that'll give them a valid baseline. It just won't. They would need to actually go to that same location or comparable locations probably dozens of times.
Gotcha.
Be to different areas that are not reported to be haunted and take samples there. There's so much more to the science behind how this should be done than what they're currently doing.
Well, you know what? I have to tell you something there, Ben. We are unfortunately coming to the end of the interview for this week. Can you hear me?
Yes.
That yes. is sad because I have like 15,000 more questions for you, but I'm also afraid that tomorrow morning when you check Facebook, you are going to be blocked by thousands of people. You're defriended, man! You're defriended! Ghost hunter! No, I'm just kidding. You're fine. I'm only kidding. But what I'm going to say is we have a few minutes before I actually let you go and let you give you shout-outs. I had a question that I touched on with you during the second commercial break, and I asked you, what are the major deficiencies and problems with most ghost hunting groups and their methods? And you had an easy, quick, fast answer for that.
Yeah, basically, I wrote an article. It's a PDF called "The Top 5 Ghost Hunting Mistakes," and it's available for free on my website, radfordbooks.com, RADFORDbooks.com. It's actually adapted from Chapter 4 in my book, and it has just what it says: the top 5 ghost hunting mistakes, and it goes in depth into the main ways that people do their ghost hunting and also particularly the ways that people see it on TV. And I explain in detail why those are wrong and the right way to do it.
Okay, that's perfect. So let me put you on the spot right now while we're actually on the air. So if we ask you to come back on in a couple of months, can we make that happen, pal?
Absolutely.
And I have an interesting twist, too. I might be opening up a viewer's mailbag.
How okay.
would you like that, brother?
Hey, man, I'd love it. I'm all for it, man. I mean, you know, we're all on the same side as far as I'm concerned. I mean, yeah. you know, I may take a more hardline scientific skeptical point of view to it,
right.
but you know, I would love to find a ghost. I mean, I'm not dismissive of ghosts. If I were sure the ghost didn't exist, I wouldn't waste my time. I mean, this is. I love this stuff, man. I put my life into this, and so
right.
I'm taking it seriously. And I just wish that more ghost hunters would take it seriously because it is such a fascinating topic.
Right, and we always tell folks at home too. When you're out there, if you're a ghost hunter, it's something that anyone and everyone can do. But you got to be your own harshest critic. You have to police your own evidence. And I think we are on the same team. And people out there that are more of a believer than you are, Radford, they got to understand that we're just different divisions of that same team.
There you go.
Gotcha. And we tell everybody else too. By all means,
we need each other.
Try everything.
Wide open field.
Yeah.
All right, so before we cut to the chase and we have to let Mr. Radford go for the evening this week, this is your chance now, Ben, to give you shout-outs, tell the folks at home stuff that you have upcoming, some more shout-outs as far as your websites, your URLs and whatnot. Take it away, Benjamin Radford, and take us home, brother.
Okay, man. All right. As you noted, I've got five books out. I've got my current book is Scientific Paranormal Investigation, How to Solve Unexplained Mysteries. I've got another book coming out in spring of 2011 from the University of Mexico Press on how I solved the Chupacabra mystery. I know that's a bold claim, but I think I've done it. I'll be speaking at the James Randi's TAM, the Amazing Meeting in Las Vegas. I'll be at Dragon Con. I'm all over the place. You can also see my columns on livescience.com, Discovery News, and I don't know, anywhere and everywhere.
You're a traveling man, huh?
Yeah, more than I'd like, but yeah. I also invented a board game called Playing Gods, the board game of divine domination.
I saw it online, man. That's really cool. I saw it, Playing Gods, dude.
Yeah.
Next time, we're going to play it online.
We're going to smoke people and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Smite.
We got to get him back up here to visit Buffalo.
You feel like he'll come up for a conference or a workshop?
Yeah, in fact, oddly enough, I was actually in St. Catharines, Ontario, 2 weeks ago for a ghost conference. I was giving a couple talks there. So, I wouldn't mind coming back up there and seeing Buffalo and meeting you guys.
Sweet.
Okay, we're going to definitely make that happen.
And we need a part two of this, another interview.
Oh, in the meantime, we're going to have a part two with you in a couple of months, my friend. We're definitely going to keep in touch. So I want to say thank you so much, Benjamin Radford, for coming on Beyond Ghosts. It's forever in your debt, pal. We appreciate your opinions and everything, man. We're going to talk to you hopefully again in the next couple of months. We're going to see you before the year's up, brother.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you so much. Do not hang up yet, though, please. We're taking our final break, Ben. Do not hang up. We want to say goodbye to you properly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, folks at home, we're taking our final break of the evening. John Crescito, Chef Chick Willard. This is the house that Beyond Ghosts Interactive Paranormal built, babies. Be back in a minute. If you move, you will be smited by Marty.
Smolted,
you ass.
I want to throw lightning bolts.
Get him. All right, folks, Beyond Ghosts Interactive Paranormal is coming to a conclusion for the week of June 15th, 2010. That's right, we had a fantastic time talking to our buddy there, the managing editor of the magazine Skeptical Inquirer, Mr. Benjamin Radford. I'm hoping that we all learn a thing or two. If nothing else, we keep an open mind on this program. I keep saying it, it's the theme, two sides to every story. Coming up next week, we're talking to another friend of ours, another interesting fellow. Is going to be conspiracy theory night, and it's going to be open mic night with none other than, we're talking Dr. Alfred Adams is going to be here, and he's going to be freaking the hell out of you about all kinds of stuff coming up, which could spell the end of humanity as we know it, 2012. Folks, you want to get out, get off the couch, come do some ghost hunting with us, see what these guys like Benjamin Radford and Beyond Ghosts talk about. Is there life after death? Is the paranormal something real? Come and check it out. We have events. The new one we're going to announce tonight is going to be happening on, tell me when, Mr. Shefchik, September 5th, 2010. That's right. And where's it going to be, Mr. Willard?
We are doing the first ever investigation of all three vessels over at the Buffalo Naval Park.
That is right. You people heard about that dramatic, sad story. The boys from Waterloo, Iowa, were talking all five of the Fighting Sullivans. They were lost during the Battle of Guadalcanal. Supposedly one or all haunt that ship, their namesake, the USS Sullivans. Well, that ship, babies, is docked here in the Buffalo Harbor. That's right, Willard said it. You get a chance to do all three of the ships, not just the USS Sullivans. We're doing the submarine, the Croaker, and, of course, we're doing the battleship, which is called what, Chef Chick?
Little Rock.
September 5th.
The USS Little Rock, that's right. Battleship, destroyer, and submarine. It's going to happen September 5, 2010, first time ever. All three vessels, come and ghost hunt. You can eat some chow with us. We're going to do dinner on the deck. Telling you what, it's going to be Q&A, lecture, great time. More information, it's the first time it's been announced, babies. Go to beyondghost.com, look for the events tab, and we'll see you guys in October, September. We'll see you August. We better see you in friggin' July. Stick with beyondghost.com. Thank you for listening. Spread the word. See you next week, folks. Love you. Ciao, bella!